everyone. Thanks for tuning in to Deeper Grooves, Musicians on Music, hosted by Cliff Beach and sponsored by California Soul Music Record Label. I'm so happy to have my great friend Clara Means on today to talk about her latest album, Sidewalk Astronomy, which was number one on iTunes. Please help me welcome Clara.
Hello.
Hello, Clara.
Hey, Cliff. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Good, good, good.
Excellent. So happy to be able to have you on the podcast today.
I know. Happy to be here. Thank you for asking me.
Of course, of course. It's always exciting when I get to interview someone that I know in a little more depth. You know, you can know a person, but then, you know, there's so many things that happen and just keeping up with everybody. It's always nice to be able to go back and kind of look at their career and celebrate all their wins, which, you know, sometimes I feel we're so busy getting from project to project and onto the next that we sometimes don't get to look back and reflect. And this is obviously a good time to do that.
True, true. Yeah. It's definitely a good time to do that.
So yeah, I wanted to talk about your latest album, Sidewalk Astronomy. It debuted at number one on iTunes singer-songwriter charts. And I wanted to kind of talk about how that project came to be and how you wrote that new material specifically.
Well, I guess, yeah, that new material from, or the material from Sidewalk Astronomy kind of, well, my dad passed away was one of the big things in my life that happened, I guess. And it was kind of, but I didn't really ever know him very well. You know, he wasn't very active in my life. So there's a couple songs in there about kind of like coming to terms with that and, you know, forgiveness, forgiving him. And also just, you know, how do you mourn, you know, a relationship you never really had, you know, and I don't know. So yeah, a couple of those songs were about that, I guess. And then it was a mishmash of different things that were happening in my life. There was this, some heartbreak songs. Sidewalk Astronomer is kind of, you know, at the time, a lot of my living, I was making street performing, and it was about another street performer, but he was a sidewalk astronomer. So yeah, I was also influenced by, like, I guess, street performing and relationships, you know, Guts and Sidewalk Astronomer and Buried in Your Dreams, or trying to think of which other songs, Fiery One, they're all about like romantic relationships, you know? So yeah. And then some songs about friends and falling outs with people and, in the music business. It was a really, yeah, that album, the whole album is just like a mishmash of everything that was going on in my life in those couple years, I guess, that I wrote those songs. So yeah, it was a mishmash about Los Angeles, the music business, my dad passing away, romantic relationships, friendships. And yeah, so here we go. I don't know if that was a good answer.
No, all the answers are good. It's your story and you get to tell it.
Yeah.
But it's interesting that you mentioned, you know, for many years, you've been what I would call the hardest working busker in the business in LA. And so tell us about your experience with music and fans busking in Los Angeles.
Well, busking has definitely taught me a lot, you know, I mean, because when you play a gig in a club, you know, you have an audience that has paid to be there, or even if they haven't paid there to be there, they're in a comfortable seat. They've decided they're just going to stick it out probably for the 40 minutes or an hour, you know, there's heating or air conditioning or whatever, you know, and they plan to be there. So busking, on the other hand, you know, you're stopping foot traffic that they're probably rushing off to do shopping or run errands, and you're just there, you know, providing music in the middle of the street or on the, you know, sidewalk or whatever. So you're trying to grab their attention while they're running off to somewhere else. And you get all sorts of people, you know, people that might not necessarily go to a music venue, you know, that, so it's really cool. You know, you get little kids and, you know, I mean, all age range. And yeah, it's an interesting experiment in how to like stop people and convince them to buy your CD or your USB drive or, you know, find you on socials, you know? And, yeah, so it's definitely taught me a lot in terms of like stopping a crowd and keeping their interest, maybe like creating variety in the song, you know, once they get a crowd, you know, kind of doing a fast song, then a slow song, a romantic song, then a silly song, you know, something to kind of keep their attention because people are so on the go in that setting. Also, I've been able to meet people from all around the world, you know, a lot of people in Europe and Asia and, you know, all over through street performing. Cause you know, the places I do it in the Santa Monica Pier, the Third Street Promenade, and I've done it in other places, you know, around the country and stuff too. and in Europe a bit too. And you'll meet a bunch of tourists, you know, because a lot of the places are touristy places. So that's been really awesome. I got to play a couple of weddings in Germany through two different German couples I met. So that was amazing. And yeah, I mean, it's street performing is amazing. It's a really interesting, I mean, also has its downsides. You meet, you know, because there's not that separation of stage and audience, you meet a lot of people that want to come up and talk to you about their life. Like when you're on the stage, it's kind of like you're separated from the audience, but street performing, you just seem so easy to talk to, I guess, because you're on the same level, you know, as everybody else. And it's not a formal performance. So people will come up and, you know, talk to you about whatever they want to talk to you about. And some people, sometimes crazy people will get in your face or you'll get robbed or, you know, I don't know. I mean, it's just very unpredictable. You know, it's not always safe in it, but you know, I mean, I guess those risks are like part of the fun. Sometimes they add an element of excitement, but not always a positive thing, I guess. But yeah. So anyway, street performing has been really great. I mean, it's definitely taught me a lot about music and about people and sales, I don't know, you know, connection, just connecting to an audience. And yeah, that's been pretty awesome overall, I'd say.
Yeah, it looks like it had a lot of advantages for you. You were the number one female musician with over 100,000 followers on Periscope, which is now shutting down. You're migrated to other platforms, but I know you were able to perform at Twitter and they own Periscope. And so how did you navigate social media as an indie artist and as a busker to kind of build that presence?
I think that busking, like really, since I'd done busking for so many years before that, before even live streaming, I think it kind of helped me, you know, in terms of live streaming isn't so different from busking. I mean, it is, it's more comfortable, like, especially if you're doing it from the comfort of your own home and, you know, it's probably safer in a lot of ways and, you know, it takes a little less effort and not having lug gear out to the street and stuff, but it's similar in that the audience could be just passing through, you know, they're just looking at their feed and they're like, oh, let me click on this, you know, and people on the internet have like no attention span, you know? So it's similar to busking in that you're trying to catch this audience that might just be passing through and just, you know, might want to be click on your broadcast for literally 20 seconds and see what you're all about. And so I think that, and also I think that street performing and live streaming, people want to hear the music, but beyond that, they also want to make a connection that you might not go to a music venue to look for. You know, they want to make more of a, like a personal connection. They want to hear your story or, you know, just see how you interact with them. It's beyond music, you know? So I think that really kind of helped me out when I first started street performing. And I also helped me out to know that, like, when I first started live streaming, a lot of people with live streaming, they get discouraged because you start and you only have a few viewers, you know, but like, I was used to that because street performing, you can have some days where you have like so few people and then the next day you get huge crowds, you know? I mean, you just kind of like, you learn that to not let that get to you, you know, and just to try to enjoy the playing music and enjoy connecting with even the few people you're connecting with. So I think that kind of gave me the like strength to keep pushing through the hard days of live streaming is since I had done it with busking, you know, and also when I started live streaming, I started doing it Periscope, like on the street, I would put the phone, you know, behind my tip jar. And so then I knew that I was reaching two audiences at the same time, like the audience live on the pier, the promenade, and then also the audience on the phone. And yeah. And that also, it kind of gave something else interesting to the online audience to like watch a busker kind of interact with everything going on in the street and stuff. So yeah. So Periscope has been amazing. And, you know, but now there's all sorts of places you can live stream. So now I'm mostly, because Periscope is now closing, which is a major bummer for many of us on the app, especially considering I'd like put so much time and effort and, you know, gained a following on there. And it's hard to get people over to other places. You know, I keep trying to, but yeah. So lately I've been doing Twitch, which has been awesome, but you know, it's kind of like almost like starting over again. But you know, a lot of the people from Periscope found me in other places too. So the you know, the biggest followers or whatever. So, So it's all good. But yeah, never put all your eggs in one basket, though, you know, with social media, because you never know what will be here today and gone tomorrow.
So true. So true. For anyone that remembers Friendster and the other ones, there, it's been a long time. So now, speaking of having that following, I mean, you also funded the album for Sidewalk Astronomy via Kickstarter. So how does crowdfunding come into your artist model?
Well, crowdfunding is amazing. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I did that for Sidewalk Astronomy. And thankfully, because of the Periscope community and just on, and also people I met, you know, through street performing and connected with on Facebook and Instagram and stuff like that, you know, I think I almost doubled the goal, which was awesome. Thanks to all those wonderful people. And yeah, I mean, crowdfunding is just, you know, you kind of got to really look at it as a job for that month you're doing it, you know, and think about all the people that you've reached through music already and how to reach out to them and let them know about like pre-ordering. And, you know, I did lots of live streams for that. It was really fun, but I tried to make it fun, you know, like do different things. We had, actually that wasn't for my Kickstarter, but when I did my pre-sales, I had like a stream-a-thon where I did when I was pre-selling it on iTunes, I did like a 12-hour, you know, Periscope. So yeah, I mean, through the Kickstarter and through the selling iTunes pre-sales, I just did tons of live streams on Facebook and Periscope and YouTube and Instagram, you know, just as many places as I could think of. And, you know, just tried to have fun with it, because the minute you have to look at it as a job, I think, but you also have to have fun, because people don't, you know, I've noticed, like, if I'm in a grumpy mood or something, you know, it really comes through on camera and people don't want to necessarily support you as much, you know? So you have to kind of keep your spirits up and keep things fun for you and for the viewers, you know, try different things. And because, you know, it is a job. Music, even though it's fun, it is a job, but you can definitely mix it up and keep it fun for everybody by like just thinking of different ways to come about it, I guess. I don't know if that answered the question. I'm trying to remember what the original question was. But yeah.
Oh, no, it's okay. Yeah. It's just free form.
Yeah, free form. Yeah.
I think it's fine because, I mean, obviously you've had a ton of success. You've been featured in Billboard, No Depression, Pop Matters, American Songwriter Magazine, BuzzFans LA, Yay LA, Digital Music News. And so how does getting like articles and press help to amplify what you're doing?
Articles and press definitely help. I mean, I think, you know, it's still articles and press definitely help. Like it was really great having the Billboard article about the Danger video, and that helped to get that video out there a lot. And I was super excited about that video because that was like an animated video. But anyway, yeah, articles and press definitely help. And also, you know, but really what helps, I think, is just building up a fan base, you know, and connecting with fans. I think that's even more, I mean, articles and press are super important, but I think building up a fan base and connecting with fans is even more so. And then when you get those articles and they share them out, you know, that can kind of snowball. But like, let's say if you get a huge article, well, not a huge article. Let's say you get like a, you know, an article in like a mid-sized publication or whatever, right? And you don't have a fan base to share it out, and then it won't necessarily like, you know, turn into something more. So I think, yeah, articles are definitely great, getting some write-ups and stuff. But yeah, it's definitely also important to have people there who care about them and to share them out and stuff like that, because then I'll spread the word even more.
Yeah. And I love that. I think you're right. When other people are spreading and talking about you, that word of mouth carries so much more weight sometimes than coming from you. I saw that you also were featured in the book, How to Make It in the New Music Business, Practical Tips on Building a Loyal Following and Making a Living as a Musician. So you must have made some heavy impression on the author to be written about in that way. So what did they say about you in the book? Like what people reading it would glean from your work on the streets and as an indie musician?
Yeah. You know, it's just basically kind of about live streaming and about Periscope and just about like reaching those super fans, you know, kind of. So you look at people, I think people lots of times when they think of musicians, they think of them as like super poor or super rich and famous, you know, they don't realize there's like middle class, you know, you can be a middle class musician, you know, and you don't have to have like millions and millions of followers or millions of fans or be signed to a major label that's putting out your record and pushing it to make a living. And that's kind of what the book touches on, and how basically, you know, if you're connecting with fans and they're really connecting with your work, and you just get those like core super fans, you know, I mean, it doesn't even necessarily have to be that many, but if you get a few that are super passionate and, you know, want to buy your merchandise or share you out or become a top patron on Patreon or Kickstarter, that can really be enough to like help you make a living and to fund your records and stuff like that. And so, yeah, I guess the book is just kind of about, you know, how the new music business, how we're actually less dependent nowadays on record labels and to, you know, to get our music out there, because, you know, now everybody can put their music on Spotify and YouTube and all this stuff, put out music videos, and we can even record, you know, lots of people can record records, you know, by themselves, they, if they know enough, have enough knowledge about Pro Tools or whatever, you know, they're using. So yeah, it's just kind of about how the music business has changed so much over the past 5-10 years. It's crazy. Also though, we do need to, even though we don't necessarily need like record labels now, it's a lot harder now that people can listen to every recorded thing for free, basically on Spotify. And you get, you know, you might not get that much money from Spotify, of course. So that's definitely made things more difficult, but connecting to those fans who are saying, hey, you know, I understand, like I'm listening to her music for free and a bunch of people are, so I want to throw her this tip, you know what I mean? To encourage, or I want to buy this merchandise to support, you know, music in these days when it's so hard, especially now with COVID too. On top of that, like a few years ago, Spotify and music sales dropping so drastically because everybody can stream it, which is great in a lot of ways, of course, but you know what I mean? It's just harder. You have to adjust how you're making money. So then, you know, see lots of people depend on touring for money. And now it's like, well, oh my gosh, now COVID, like touring isn't even possible. So it's crazy, you know, this past year that, you know, now a lot of people are doing live streaming and figuring out other ways to make money, because it just seems like the different channels, you know, keep getting kind of knocked off in terms of how we could make money, you know, as musicians. So yeah, I guess the book is about connecting to your, I mean, well, there's so many things the book mentions, but I think my section is about live streaming and connecting to those fans and, you know, it just kind of creating a community where people want to tune in and people want to support. And it's, you know, not even necessarily just about the music. It's about like, yeah, creating community and I don't know, kind of giving people some support through the music and just through being there for them. And so, yeah, it's about a bunch of different things. So.
Definitely. I mean, I think building that type of tribe underneath you is definitely a great foundation. You know that you have people ready for your next thing or next piece of content, and you are super consistent and diligent in getting yourself out there with the live streaming. And it seems like, you know, you still are able to find ways to keep it fresh, and you have very cute decorations. People kind of get that inner intimate vibe coming from your home. And so now I originally met you at Room 5, which is no more, during the Poet Ronnie Girl Acoustically Speaking night.
Yeah.
And there were so many great artists in that collective, and we lost some recently. Rest in peace. So tell us how you started in music. Now, I was told the story that it was originally at Panera Bread, and you were pushed into doing it. Starting to write songs.
Well, yeah, I had like just started playing music, and I just moved to Los Angeles, and was, yeah, I was like staying with the friend of a friend, in Studio City there. And I just like walked by Panera Bread and I saw this flyer and it said, you know, an open mic with Poet Ronnie Girl. I don't remember what it said, but it said open mic. And so then I was like, I just started playing guitar. So I thought, well, you know, this is walking distance from where I'm staying. I'll just go there and try it. Why not try this open mic? Like I'd never done an open mic before. I'd never seen an open mic, never been to one, but I was like, I have these two songs that I've written that I can kind of stumble through. So yeah, I remember I got to the open mic and it was Poet Ronnie Girl's open mic. And yeah, my guitar didn't have like a electric pickup or anything. Actually, then a friend of mine, and he passed away recently too, actually. I don't know if you met him, Derek Mock. Anyway, I met him there, and I met Luis there, our mutual friend, Luis Nariño. Anyway, so Derek was like, oh, your guitar doesn't plug in. So he lent me his guitar, and I took my little notebook out and I mumbled through my like two songs that I had written, you know. I was terrified, but it was really fun. So I mean, it was, yeah. And afterwards, like Ronnie and Derek were both very nice. And they're like, you did a good job. No, that was great. And, you know, I could barely talk. I was like scared. But yeah, so that's how it started. And then, yeah, Ronnie started doing the Room 5 thing soon after that. And that's when I met you and a bunch of other folks through Room 5. So yeah. Yep. That was how it went.
Let's go back before then. What's your actual origin story? Like, where are you from? How did you end up in LA? And I believe, weren't you doing acting before music?
No, I started, I'm from New Jersey. Then my sister was kind of moving out west. And so I came and stayed with her for like a month and helped her out with, well, she was like a single mom at the time. So I was kind of babysitting. And then I just decided to like move to LA from there. I don't even know. It was kind of just like a spur of the moment thing. And my mom knew a friend of a friend and called him up and was like, can Claire stay with you? And so, yeah, I just moved out there from that. But I just started playing guitar then. I wasn't even really like sure if it was something I wanted to pursue. But as soon as I got to LA, that like immediately, that's when I did the Panera Bread thing. So yeah, that's kind of how it started.
Wow. And so who are your music and songwriting influences? Like, what did you listen to and who inspires you?
My music and songwriting influences are, I guess, a lot of folky stuff like Bob Dylan, Leonard Cohen, Joni Mitchell, Nina Simone, Paul Simon, you know, yeah, a lot of folky stuff, Fiona Apple. Those are probably my biggest influences, but I've listened to all sorts of music, the Beatles. Yeah, I don't know. I've listened to all sorts of music, but those are probably my biggest influences. Lucinda Williams, I don't know, all sorts of people. But I guess I like lyrics a lot, you know, pay attention to lyrics a lot. So, you know, any kind of very lyrical, although I don't know, melodies are important, equally important. So yeah, I guess those are my biggest influences.
Is there anyone new you're listening to that maybe we should also check out?
Yeah. Let's see. Anybody new that I'm listening to? Well, I've been listening the latest Fiona Apple album is awesome, by the way. Not new at all, I know, but I love her latest album. Laura Marling, I've been listening to a lot. I don't know if you listen to her, but she's like, pretty folky, I guess. I've been listening to her a lot. Brandi Carlile. I've been listening to my friend Soli Mora. I've been listening to her album a lot. And my friend Rosa Pullman. Trying to think of who else knew, like newbies that I've been listening to. Doopa doopa. I'm probably forgetting a bunch of things. I'm trying to think. I was just listening to today. I took a walk and I was this morning and I was listening to Aldeas Harding. She's kind of interesting and like folky and like kind of quirky, I guess, in some ways. Actually, when I first started playing music, another person I was listening to once that was kind of very quirky is this harp player, Joanna Newsom. I don't know if you listen to her. She's very interesting. She's an interesting style.
Well, it sounds like you have a good mix of influences. And I mean, all the ones, the top ones that you named, I think people will recognize. And they've been lauded for their songwriting ability. And they've had long careers. So you can definitely see their style changes and evolutions over time. So speaking of evolutions, what's next for you musically?
What is next for me? I will be hopefully releasing a new album in 2021. I really need to get to recording it, but yeah, I have a single that I'm trying to finish up to put out in the beginning of the year. It's kind of about the pandemic. I started writing in the beginning of the pandemic and then I put it aside and then I finished it. You know, I'd written most of the lyrics, but didn't put it to a melody until a couple months ago. And so now I'm trying to decide on the production exactly that I want and record it. And, I want to get that out in either January or February. So that's called Is This the End? But yeah, I definitely want to put out a new album, I think, in 2021. I don't know whether I'm going to do an EP or a full-length album. I just love full-length albums, but I know like nowadays, it really doesn't matter. Like, you know what I mean? Like you might as well put out an EP but I don't know. I just love the idea of a full-length album, but it takes more time and money and writing and stuff like that. So but yeah, I'm hoping that I can get, either an EP or an album out in 2021. Definitely a couple singles for sure. A couple singles and early on in 2021, because I want to get this song out. It's actually, it's on my YouTube channel. It's called Is This the End? But it's, you know, just kind of relevant to everything going on and everything that's happened over the past year. So I want to get that one out first. But there's a couple other songs too. There's another song called Loveless Man that I want to release as a single too, that can be heard on my YouTube channel too. A live version of it can be heard on my YouTube channel. And you know, a few other songs that I might release as singles too. So yeah, I need to get on it. You know, I mean, COVID kind of put a pause to everything. But I've been playing around with recording myself because now I have a nice, really nice microphone. But there's still so much to learn in terms of recording, you know. So yeah, we'll see how much of it. I really do want to get to the point where I can do a lot of recording by myself, though, because it just takes, you know, when you go in the studio, it just, there's like the pressure of like the clock's ticking. And maybe if it's an hourly thing, you know, the money is ticking, or, you know, if it's a per song thing, you don't want to, you know, so you're using up someone else's time, and how many takes can you do? You know, I don't know, you know? So I love working with other people, but it's kind of nice to like play around and do stuff by yourself and just take all the time and take all the time and get in a comfortable zone and stuff, you know? So.
Yeah. I mean, I think home recording has become so much easier, and the technology has become less expensive. And a lot of artists are by necessity being at home starting to record more. And especially for your style, since you're already recording live a lot of your songs and content with just guitar and vocal, and it sounds great. You know, it also opens you up to having people work remotely on it to add their instruments, you know, during this time where we're in lockdown. So I think either way, having some more singles or an EP will be good. But I definitely understand artists that like the album, which is definitely more classic music. But it all depends. I think the music and the songs will dictate kind of what you do. And the fans will also be vocal about what they want. And you know, being able to tease them with some of the singles as you work on the EP and the album is always good, too.
Yeah. Do you have big plans for 2021? Are you going to be putting out some new music?
Yes. I mean, we've already released one single at the end of October. And so we have two more singles coming out. One coming out in January and then another in February. And then an EP that's coming out in March.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
Of five songs. And that basically has like a more contemporary hip-hop influence kind of vibe to my vintage funk vibe.
Oh, cool. Okay. Yeah,
super excited about that. And then obviously, you know, more seasons of this podcast are coming out as well. And then we're going to be going back into the studio next month to start working on a Christmas album. We did a Christmas show with LA Rex and Parks this year. And so we did a lot of new arrangements for that, that we want to kind of document in an album, a Christmas album for 2021.
Oh, awesome.
I've always wanted to do it, so I guess to cross it off the bucket list.
And it's good you're getting started on it early.
Oh, yeah. Well, the good thing about Christmas stuff is that for licensing, I did an original song for it. And you can shop that all year round because they're always making bad Hallmark Lifetime Christmas movies that need music and Netflix and stuff. And so all the streaming services. They're all the same movie. That's why the songs, I think, work so well. It's always a guy from the big city and a girl from the farm or something. Two people with opposites attract.
Yeah.
At Christmas with some kind of interesting premise. I think definitely getting out more content. Content is king, and I think people are definitely looking for more music. There's more music released now than at any other time in history. Yeah. But it sounds like you have a good handle on getting it out to your fan base and then amplifying it from there. So we always ask when we wrap up two rapid fire questions to all of our guests to kind of help the new generation, help people kind of understand and summarize what you do. So the first one is, what advice would you give someone starting out? So someone starting out in music now, what would you tell them?
I guess for writing, think outside the box. I think that's, you know, think outside the box. And don't over edit yourself. Just, you know, go crazy with your writing and then edit later. And just keep plugging away with the music. I mean, it definitely, sometimes it can take a little bit of time to get a following. But I think consistency. For instance, if you're going to do live streaming, just do as much as you can, or make a schedule or whatever. If you're going to gig, book as many different kinds of gigs as you can, in the beginning, try, a lot of different things. And then later you can decide, okay, I don't need to do this kind of gig anymore, or I don't like this kind of gig, but try different things, try to play for different crowds, see how it goes, mix it up. Don't just play the same place over and over again, and just keep creating and writing and challenging yourself. Remember, you can write, about anything in life. You don't have to just write love songs or whatever. And yeah, don't be afraid to think outside the box and how you approach your career and how you approach songwriting and creating music.
Excellent. And what do you want your musical legacy to be? And I know you're still early in your career, but when it's all said and done, 50, yeah. 60, 70 years from now, when they're ready to dump our memories into robots, what do you want to be remembered for most?
I guess my songwriting, I want to just keep being able to write, even if, I just want to keep writing for myself, and I'd love to write for other people too, and just try as many different kinds of songs and, try to be as creative as possible. So I guess songwriting would be a great thing to be remembered for.
I think you definitely will. I think you're well on your way and you have some amazing songs. Now, Claire, where can people find you? And if they're going to start listening to you, where should they start?
You can find me on all socials. I'm just Claire Means, Claire without an I, Means like Claire Means Business. So Claremeans. And yeah, now my main live streaming place is Twitch. I go on there multiple times a week. So come hang out there. That's super fun. And also I'm on Facebook and Instagram, YouTube, Twitter. I'm trying this new app called Haps to Spotify. Listen on Spotify and follow there, because I'll be putting some new singles out. And iTunes and my website, claremeans.com, if you want to look at merch or anything, and sign the email list, the old school thing. Cause email lists will always be around, well, hopefully. Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. They're not like a social media that might disappear or whatever. So yeah, sign the email list. And yeah, those are all sorts of different ways we can stay in touch.
Awesome. And if they're going to go on Spotify and stream you, is there a certain song or a certain album that they should dive into first?
Yeah, definitely check out the latest album first, Sidewalk Astronomy. There's three albums on there. Sidewalk Astronomy is the latest one. War for Love was the one before that, and White Bamboo. So yeah, you can check out all three. My favorite is the latest. But yeah, I'm proud of all the three albums. They're pretty different from each other, somewhat. So yeah, check them out and you guys can decide which one you like the best. But yeah, Sidewalk Astronomy is the latest one. So check that out.
Excellent. Well, you've heard it here first from Claire Means. Claire, it was a pleasure talking to you on the podcast today, Deeper Grooves. We will definitely circle back to you when it's all said and done, so that you get links to everything. We'll post it up. Yeah, we look forward to all of your new music in 2021 and what the new year has to bring for you. And we'll definitely be keeping in touch and talking to you soon.
Thank you so much for having me, Cliff. This is really fun.
Awesome. Well, take care. Enjoy your day.
Thank you, too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
You've just listened to Deeper Grooves, Musicians on Music, hosted by Cliff Beach and sponsored by California Soul Music Record Label. I had so much fun checking out my old friend Claire Means and talking about her number one iTunes album, Sidewalk Astronomy, which you can stream everywhere now on streaming platforms. I'd like to thank our engineer Tim Hall and 1192 Studios for mixing and mastering this recording today. If you like what you hear and you want to hear more, you can check us out on Tuesdays at www.californiasoulmusic.com/deepergrooves or anchor.fm/deepergrooves. Until then, keep it chill. We'll talk to you soon. Take care.